This is Through the Years, a history of Cape Breton recordings. Join us on a musical journey through the decades featuring the vocals, songs, and stories of Cape Breton recording artists who have made an impact at home and abroad.
On this edition of Through the Years, iconic Cape Breton artist Matt Minglewood, rockin' the blues.
In studio, Roy Bathis, better known as, of course, Matt Minglewood. And Matt, how are things?
Good.
If we go back to the early days of Cape Breton Recordings, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, that there were no recording studios here at that time. It was late 60s.
Yeah.
And what prompted the fact that you wanted to get that recording out?
Well, actually, the first recording we ever did was at CJCB Radio in the studio, and we put the whole band in there, and we did... It was with the Rockin' Saints, and we did Whiter Shade of Pale.
Okay.
Because that's when I sang with the band, and it turned out good. Recorded the old way with a couple of mics in the room, and it turned out great. But you're right, there were no studios, and I got on the road with the Moon Minglewood, Sam Moon, Matt Minglewood, and Universal Power, and we traveled all over the place, and then it became just Moon Minglewood. But we didn't. Sam and I were just totally different musically, you know what I mean? So I decided that in order to get anywhere, we'd make these tapes and submit them to record companies, and they'd say, well, what are you? You're all over the place. So I decided I would go more in a blues rock vein, which is what I wanted to do. And Sam didn't want to do that. So we amicably, we just parted ways. And so then I went into Solar Audio in Halifax, which was underneath a Music Stop, owned by the same owner. And they gave us a deal where we could record the record, but it didn't cost us anything. We'd pay it back out of the record sales, which was the only way we could have done it, because it couldn't go to Toronto. So we did the record, tried to be focused on one thing, and that was the Red record, and we sent it out to all these records. I took it to Toronto, took them all, and the first thing they said was, you're all over the place. You're blues, you're rock, you're funk. It's country in one point.
It tells a story. East Coast Blues pretty well tells the story of the entire album. And,
it does.
You know, being on tour and trying to get that record out to commercial radio.
Yeah. Right? Well, we didn't get a record deal, so we put it out ourselves and just sold it off the back of the truck. And it sold amazing. And sold enough that we got interest from some people with money to do the next one. So, but it was hard getting it on radio and... But a lot of people did play, stood up. It got us our foot in the door. It gave us a start, you know.
Yeah.
And we toured all across the country, which is what we did.
Seems like just a day or so since I offered you a ride. Down along the waterfront just to watch the evening tide. But you turned me down because you knew found friends had better things in store. With sweet dreams on your mind, you wandered off to make the score. But I say lately I've been worried, babe. Stop to wonder why I saw you walking down the street with nothing in your mind. Till you pay the price just to roll the dice in Hard Knocks Grammar School.
About touring back in the day, I mean, you had your own truck and you had your own gear. That's unheard of today.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's promo companies that pretty well handle all that now, the promoters.
Yeah.
But tell us about that. I mean, trying to travel and all the expense of that.
Well, when you started back then, even with the Rockin' Saints, you had your own gear, what it was, Shore Columns or whatever. And as we moved up and got to bands, we'd have buses, like old school buses. We called them tour buses, but they were Partridge Family school bus. And you bought your PA and lights, and you dragged it in and out yourself everywhere you went. And then as I got up into, we had a truck, like a one-ton truck with the moon, the first Matt Minglewood thing, and a car that we drove around in. And when I got the new deal with, finally got a deal with RCA, I had just bought a three-ton truck, brand new, and it wouldn't fit in all the new gear that we had to buy to haul around. It wouldn't fit in it, so I had to buy a tractor trailer. So it just, you know, because there were no production companies. There were no PA lighting companies back then. So everybody had to have their own stuff.
Wow.
I wish they had of, because it cost me a bloody fortune. And then it got all beat to crap with after a couple of years of touring. And the truck got beat to crap. The gear got all beat up. Going in and out of arenas and clubs for 2 years.
Yeah.
It was tough, I mean, but there was no other way to go, so we decided to go big or stay home.
Wheels on this old bus keep right on turning. On the highway across New Brunswick, now they're burning. And if she don't break down this time, we're gonna hit that border just about nine. Cross the state of Maine, to the border again we go. We got a rock and blues band trying the best we can to please you.
I remember working at CJCB, and I was sent down to cover the release of your first album at the Misty Moon. And we spoke there that night between the you standing on tables and chairs and things like that. But we come over to the bar and you spoke that night. We had a little conversation, and I said to you at that time, I said, this is your national release. How come you're having it in Halifax and not in Cape Breton? And you said to me, your exact words, they don't appreciate me in Cape Breton. And I believe the statement was the right one to say, because Halifax was your base.
It was, yeah.
I mean, you, and to a certain point, you have to go away make it big and then come home again. And I think that was your feeling, and I know that was your thoughts at the time. So
yes, it was, and it was true, because even a lot of radio stations balked at the first record and at playing things. And as soon as I landed a thing with RCA, it all changed.
Boom.
It all changed. Then all of a sudden they were on board with it, because I guess it was legitimate then, you know what I mean? Oh, he's got a big record company, so there must be something here.
Halifax is a base, I mean, for years.
Halifax
the Misty Moon
was
Show
good
Bar.
To us.
I mean, you played there almost nonstop, almost every weekend.
Yeah.
And would pack the place. I mean, it was crazy.
Yes, it was. It was. We used to play at a place called Zapata's, and it was maybe 250, 300 seater, and we were packing that place. It was lined up every night. And I went to the owner and I said, listen, I wouldn't mind if you give us a few more bucks here. We're packing the place. And I was looking for like $300 more for the week, right? And he wouldn't do it. So we went down to the Misty Moon, which was at that point on Gottingen Street, and it was they brought in a lot of bands from, of course, that was in the black district of town, and they brought in a lot of bands from Philadelphia and stuff, but it was a big bar. So I went to Terry, and I said, Terry, why don't you give us a shot in here? We'll play, because we used to play at the old Moon Minglewood days. We would play at the Club Unusual, which was, we were the first white band ever playing there. We'd play there regularly, and it was a great little gig. It was owned by Bucky Adams and Joe Seeley. Great players, and so we had a history in there, and we went down to the Misty Moon and started packing that place. I said, we go in for the door. You don't have to guarantee us anything. And the rest of it was history. It took off, and the Moon became a big thing then. It was a big bar then, and a lot of people that wouldn't normally go there started going there.
Yeah.
And it just took off, and then they built a bigger one down Kent Road, and then the other one after that on Barrington Street. So.
It's too late to write it. I better try and forget it. I know.
It's amazing how things have changed over the years. You've gone through the RCA deal. You've had, what, two or three albums with RCA?
Yeah, did three with them, and then they put out a best of.
Yeah. And then moving on to CBS.
We went to CBS for what was supposed to be a two-record deal, but as has happened to us in the past before, it happened in New York, we had a deal. Then the company, the upper management changed, new people in, and they sort of went through the list, put money into this, scrap that, put money into this, scrap that. I think we were put on this. We just had the record. It just came out, and it cost them a fortune to make it. And because I did it in Toronto and Jimi Hendrix's studio in New York, and they had the big idea that I was going to be the next lover boy.
Yeah.
And then the management changed, the top brass changed, and we were put on the scrap heap. We had the record out, and not one, I toured the country, and one CBS rep came to see us in the whole tour.
Wow.
You know, and even the this just shows you how it works sometimes. Even the East Coast rep, and I was big down here, didn't even have a clue that I had a record on his label. So
communication, right?
Yep.
And then, of course, you moved on to recording in Toronto. Me and the Boys came out after that, and you've had success. Almost became somewhat country to a certain point.
Well, I after the demise, the band, we just couldn't keep up after the no support from the record company. And people like Enver decided he wanted to, you know, get out of music for a while and make some money, because we weren't making any money. Mm-hmm. You know, we were making it, but not taking it home. And guys decided to leave. Paul Dunn's had enough. And so we did one final tour, and that was it. So I took a year off and just to rethink things and just hung around Cape Breton. Played the odd trio gig at the Dominion Legion and stuff like that. And,
mm-hmm.
And I thought I wanted to give kind of like a rock and country a shot. That's what my vision was. And as it turns out, I was way ahead of my time, because that's what we did. And that's when I ended up going with Savannah Records.
That's right. And you were nominated for Juno, too, right? So
yes. Well, yeah. I'd been nominated for one, for the first RCA record, and didn't win. Loser. And then... again, I nominated for country song. It was Someday We'll Ride in Cadillac, but that was country song performance of the year, or whatever. And loser again.
Well, I shouldn't
but
say
that
loser.
Song did win. No, did me and the boys
well.
Won. For a songwriter award. It won Songwriter of the Year. So.
Someday I'm gonna ride in a Cadillac.
It's amazing changes, and then after that, the albums were probably produced independently, a lot of the last few albums.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I did two with Savannah, and then after that, we parted ways because he moved to Nashville, and he wanted me to go, and he wanted me to change completely what I was doing and get more into a pop country thing, which was going on, and I just couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't do that.
That's
overproduced, saturated pop. I couldn't do it, so
yeah.
We parted ways. Came back home and rethought things. It was a long time before I did another record, but then I did it. Fred Lavery and Gordy Sampson had a studio now, and Jamie Foles is working at Sound Park, so there was a couple of places, there were options down here. So
yeah.
I've been pretty much recording everything down here since.
Yeah. Well, the opportunity is here. Why not stay here and do it? And,
yeah.
Yeah, the guys are quality guys.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone into a studio with songs and the producer wanted to change the whole song, or did you ever get into that situation?
Yeah, that actually kind of happened with CBS because they wanted us to, before that with RCA, we pretty much had free reign to do with my producer, with Claire Lawrence at the time, and then Duck Dunn down in Memphis. We had free reign amongst us, ourselves and the producers, to do what we wanted, which was great. And but then we went with CBS, and they wanted a rock record. They wanted us to be the next Loverboy, right? So we kind of went in that direction, but when we got in there, they wanted it, it changed a bit. I had actually recorded Me and the Boys for that record, and they said it was not, it didn't make it. It said it was too country, and it was a great version of it. So
yeah,
it's a good thing because it came out on the next one, which I didn't even think Me and the Boys was a country song at all.
No, it didn't sound country. It's still the rock.
So they that one kind of they kind of pushed us in a rock direction, which some of us weren't. We had our own idea of what rock was.
Remember back when we were young and all the crazy things that we'd done. Me and the boys out skipping school, back on the hill acting a fool. Yes, it's so easy to remember when everything was so simple then. Dodge. The boys all checking out a noisy rod. Backyard mechanics, each and every one. It was greasy work, but God, it was fun. Oh,
So what are you doing for us?
I am going to do the only song on the Fly Like Desperado record that is I didn't write.
Right.
It's actually, I found it on an album that Holger Peterson gave me, if you're familiar with Holger. Saturday Night Blues on CBC, his Saturday Night Blues show. And he gave me the CD, 35 Years of Stony Plain Records, which he owns. And I found this song on there, and I didn't know who did it. I'd never heard it before. But I agreed with everything the guy was saying. And then I looked it up, and it was Rodney Crowell, who I'm a big fan of, and I'd never heard this song. Yeah. So I said, I got to make that a Minglewood song. So I knew the first line had me. I don't like hummus. And I had to hear it. I'll give you an acoustic version of it if I can here.
Here we go.
I hate long lines, nosy neighbors and Venetian blinds, chirpy news anchors, they alter my mood. I'm offended by buzzwords like awesome and dude. Look like a train wreck and I feel like a blob. You get to know me, you might think I'm a snob, but I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been. I don't eat sushi, and I don't smoke grass, don't wear pajamas, and I don't drive fast. And I hate idle gossip and tasseled shoes. And them there slick politicians, man, they give me the blues. And I don't ride in limos and I suck at golf. Don't own a rifle that'll blow your head off. But I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been. And I'm riding that way from cradle to grave. And I'm learning to feel my hands on. I love my friends, and I love my wife. Four little babies are the light of my life. And I love Sissy Spacek, and I love Guy Clark. All the biscuits and gravy, man, I can eat with a fork. I don't want to be famous. Who gives a damn? I just want to be happy wherever I am. And I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been. And I'm riding that way from cradle to grave. I love my friends, and I love my wife. Four little babies are the light of my life. I don't want to be famous. Who gives a damn? I just want to be happy wherever I am. And I'm
guess I'm closer to heaven. And I'm closer to heaven than I've ever been.
Just finished a little stint on the road doing a little show, acoustic show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been going for a while. You've been doing that, but I'm sure it's got twists and turns that you've changed the show over the years, right?
Well, first, when I first started it, I was in at a little bar in Sydney, Butsy's we call it, but and I thought I was going to be able to do, you know, stories and songwriter kind of things and my favorite kind of stuff, and all they wanted was the old stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I was there with an acoustic guitar, and it was loud, and they and so then after that, I said, I got to rethink this, and decided that we would only do it in theaters, listening rooms,
right.
Cafes, dinner theater kind of places. So, and so that's what I've been doing lately. It's been, and it kind of grew, and it did cut... It got better, and I really found the songs that I could do and ones that I couldn't. And one of the first ones I did theater-wise was at the Savoy, and I said, after all these years of playing Can't You See, I'm going to leave it out of this acoustic show. And at the end of the show, everybody was in complete applause, and it was a good big crowd, and then when they realized I hadn't done it, it kind of turned a little ugly on me. So it was right then and there that I said, okay, there's one you can't not do.
Can't not do. I guess
so. You learn.
Yeah.
You learn as you go.
That's right.
That.
This is definitely a song about loneliness. Let's just say a farm boy from, well, Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. He might feel that he should do something different than his daddy did. Farming, fishing, coal mining. You know what I mean. Not that he's not proud of his daddy, but the big city has a way of luring a country boy. He wouldn't be there all too long before he'd get himself a pretty good job. You know what I mean. Factory somewhere. Might even work himself up to be foreman someday. You can never tell. That still don't help his loneliness. See, a man like that needs a good woman. Oh, he'd find himself a woman pretty quick, all right. Some city girls like the way a country boy treats them. They'd get themselves an apartment, you know, 25th floor, apartment 2505. You know what kind of mean. They'd live real well there for quite some time. He'd be bringing home the good bucks. Wouldn't be a year, maybe, he'd be coming home from a couple hours overtime. He'd be making that long, anxious walk down that short corridor. He'd go in that door, and then he'd see it, that note. You know the kind of note I mean. Dear John, I'm gone. A man like that got his whole world fall right down in front of his face. Find himself at 4 o'clock in the morning down at the nearest railroad station. He don't really care where he is. He don't really want to go home to Cape Breton yet, because something about country boys, they don't like to go home a failure. You know what I mean.
Gonna take a freight train. Never had.
You just turned 70. And I think most people would say at 65, yeah, okay, I'm going to retire and this is what I'm going to do and da-da-da. Don't see that from you. I see still a lot of drive there and you still want to perform. And what's your feeling on that?
Well, right from day one, when I got into this thing and decided this is what I was going to do for, was going to make a life out of it, I never got in it for fame and fortune. I really didn't. I wanted to be, I'd met people like B.B. King in Vancouver, and he was such a gracious gentleman, and I said, that's the kind of artist I want to be, a guy who's in it.
For the love of being in it.
For life, you know. Yeah. And at the time, I was like 30, and I was moaning to B.B. King about being old and like getting my first record out, and he said, oh, man, you're just a baby. And I think he was probably... At the time, he was probably in his 40s, right? And so,
yeah,
he's just a baby. And wow. So that's who I kind of wanted to be like. Those kind of guys that the blues guys and the older country guys that stay in it. You know, I wanted for me, success was being able to make a living playing music, and I've done that.
Yeah.
So I'm not the Rolling Stones, and I'm not Elton John, but I made a living playing music. And,
yeah, but the good thing, the bright spot is you're Matt Minglewood.
Yep.
And you have your own style and your own delivery, and you've done extremely well. And Matt, we thank you for coming in today, telling us a little bit about the story, about what you're doing. And I know you're going to be playing different places throughout the summer months, and we certainly hope you good on your tour, and look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you. I look forward to being seen.
Was quite a sight coming out of the night. I was greeting cold dawn. Thought at the time that the thin white line would lead me back to my swan. Oh, I was wrong. Now this song is a song of a broken heart. And it makes me sad because all that I had is love for that girl. Back on the road again, singing a sad, sad song again. Hooked on a white line, run through the sky, rocking the blues till I die. Out on the road again, riding my ride.
Listening to Through the Years, a history of Cape Breton recordings, a Coast 89.7 original production. The Coast 89.7 would like to thank the Community Radio Fund of Canada for its financial support for this special project.